U.S. Open for PGA Tour Radio. Bill Rosinski joins us. Bill, welcome into the golf shop.
Good to be here. Hope you guys are doing well.
We're doing well. So you're out there walking around with groups on Saturday afternoon. are you getting the sense? I mean, you're walking down the fairways with these guys. Are you getting the sense that things are getting out of control?
Yeah, because on Saturday I was with Charlie Hoffman and Tommy Fleetwood, who shot a combined 15 over par, and I never called a birdie. So I knew things were not going well. It was, you know, you just had this feeling. Now, there were a couple of low scores in the morning, a couple of decent scores, let's put it that way.
Yeah,
but the wind kicked up, the greens were slick, and, you know, at this point, I had already, before I had gone out there, I had watched Phil pull his, shenanigans on 13. So you knew the greens had already gotten away from the USGA in certain spots. So, yeah, you knew this was going to be, even before you went out there in the afternoon to follow the call to shots, you knew it was not going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, the USGA came out and tried to issue a mea culpa of some sort, but it certainly wasn't heartfelt, and I don't think it was a comprehensive enough acknowledgement that it got away from them. We just had our Dad of Honor winner on before you, and he was out there. Just as a fan, and he said it was dustier and sort of gustier than you would realize watching it on TV. Was that the case? Was that what you saw as well?
Well, the thing I noticed is the first couple of days, even though we had rain, what was it, raining Friday? I guess I can't remember what one of the two mornings it rained when we got out there. But on Saturday, there was almost like a. I'm not going to call it a dust storm, but there was like this haze in the air where you could just you look down the golf course. Now it's a links course, so you know you can look for miles here and see, you know, all the tents and the chalets, and you can see some of the greens as you look out on the golf course, and you could just kind of see this like a little haze in the air, and it was from the wind kicking up the dust. Mm. I mean this place is it's a links course, and It was not good. It was not good. And I kind of felt for the golfers. But then, you know, this happens all the time with the USGA.
Yes, it does.
Pinehurst. I thought Pinehurst was awful, the way they had it set up because of the – it was just dirty. I mean, the weather was fine. But at Pinehurst, was it 2014, I guess?
Yeah.
When Keimer won, that was a dust bowl. It was just filthy. They had I don't know what the USGA – what they have in their heads. I know they want to make it difficult, but, you know, every year it seems to be something. Chambers Bay, you know, I'm flying out to Seattle thinking, hey, it's June, it's going to be beautiful, it's going to be green trees, and here's this monstrosity they created, which was normally a green golf course, all of a sudden it's brown. And the funny thing I remember about Chambers Bay is Tiger was playing there that year, and he was out with Spieth, and I think they were just on the practice putting green. And Tiger says, "Boy, these greens." He says, "This is like playing Plinko." the price is right. Uh-huh. You know, you just send the thing down; it kind of bounces around. You wait till the thing. And Spieth had no idea what he was talking about. Like, what's Plinko?
Who is Bob Barker?
Yeah, right.
He'd have to say he's the guy. He's the guy from Happy Gilmore.
You know, exactly. So, you know, it was, you know, nothing surprises me with me when we have a USGA event.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Last week, I was down at Kiowa, and I had Ted Bishop come on, who we know is the former president of the PGA of America. And, you know, and he was telling me that, you know, because I asked him about Mike Davis versus Kerry Haig in terms of setup, and he said, well, I'm good friends with both of these guys. And he goes, I really feel like that Kerry Haig is conservative in terms of setting it up, where I feel like Mike Davis is a risk taker. And obviously those risks aren't going well. I mean, is that kind of the sense that you get? When I look at the PGA championship setups, especially over even the last 4 or 5 years, and especially here in Charlotte last year, I mean, of the four majors last year, to par, it was the lowest score of any of them. I mean, not in terms of low scoring, but the lowest to par, it was 8 under par or something like that, whereas the others were all double digits. Do you feel like being out there on the course that's kind of what we're getting from the USGA is like the PGA sets it up where you hit a good shot, you get rewarded, you have a chance to make birdie. You hit a bad shot, you get penalized. It's almost like the USGA is like, you hit a good shot, and it comes down to kind of maybe a bounce or where your ball ends up, whether you actually make par or double.
Yeah, my big thing with the USGA right now is the way they set up the greens. I mentioned Chambers Bay, how screwed up that was. You know, you talk about what the situation was this last week at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, and normally, and you know, the last time I was at Shinnecock in 2004, where they basically lost the seventh green, the par three, and had to keep watering it. To me, it's not so much what happens from the tee to the green. It's what happens on the green, and I think that's where the USGA really gets in a lot of trouble in their setup, and you don't have that with, the PGA Championship. And I'll be honest with you, I covered, I think, five British Opens in a row. I honestly believe, the Masters is the Masters. But as far as the quality of the field and the quality of the golf tournament and the golf shots we're seeing, to me, the British Open has been the best of the four majors over the last, I'd say 5 or 6 years. At least that's my opinion about it, because we've seen some great golf. We had Stenson and Mickelson. We had Spieth and Kuchar last year. You had that three-man playoff that we had at St. Andrews when I thought Spieth was going to win his third major in a row, because I was with him that day. They had a Monday finish there. And I can go down the list. Even my first British Open I covered was I had Adam Scott with a four-shot lead with four to go. And I end up calling Ernie Els as the winner of the golf tournament because of what happened with Scott down the stretch. But, the USGA, somehow to me, it usually happens around the greens, on the greens, the way they're set up. And if they let it get away from them, if the weather changes the way it did at Shinnecock, then it's chaos.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more about what happens to the Open Championship. They strike a much better, healthier balance between letting these guys showcase their unbelievable skill set, but also challenge them. And the USGA has just missed it. And we were talking earlier in the show, I think I know your answer to this. Can they screw up Pebble Beach?
Oh, I'm sure they could. They can screw up any golf course.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
I was there. My first U.S. Open to broadcast was 2010 when ESPN had the radio rights, and that's when Graham McDowell won. And I can't remember. I'm trying to think to that setup, and I don't think there were many complaints about that one. I thought that was a good tournament. I can't remember at all anybody complaining about.
My only one with that was 17. I didn't feel like on Sunday that anybody could hit 17 green unless they landed it in the right rough and it happened to kick left down in the green. I think the players
talked about. As G-Max did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But other than, maybe than a whole location, I think that was, obviously, setup at Pebble is crucial because they play a tour stop there every year. And
right.
You see, of course, they play different golf courses there. They play Pebble and a couple others. But, you see like 20 under par can win there. But the way the USGA will set it up, you can have, one over win there. It's all in the tightness. To me, I wish the USGA would put a premium on hitting a fairway, because nowadays, because of the golf ball and because these guys can bomb at 350 yards, and sometimes are getting 400-yard tee shots out of these guys, that you should place a bigger premium on accuracy. Don't screw up the greens. Make them 11 on the stint meter. They don't have to be 13. You can't lose them. But penalize people who hit a wayward tee shot and make them scramble for it. And I think that's what we're used to. When I started watching U.S. Opens back in, I'm trying to remember the first one, I think, was the first Open I remember watching was when I was a big Palmer fan, and Arnie lost to Casper. Mm-hmm. Might have been 66, 65, something
Olympic.
Like that. It was just at Olympic. I mean, I was crying. I couldn't believe he lost that golf tournament.
Well,
those were tough scores.
My thing is you walk with these guys in regular tour events, and we even see it in regular tour events where these guys are, if a Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, if they land one in the middle of the fairway, they're landing it at 300 yards, and it may roll out to 350 yards. And to see that at a U.S. Open, I get offended by it. And the fact that they made these fairways at Shinnecock on average 56.5% wider than they were in 2004, and only 500 yards longer to me was absurd right off the rip.
Yeah, no, I think that's where they, you know, to me that's the old school U.S. Open, narrow fairways, and you pay a real premium for missing a shot. Missing a shot. I remember I was out at Wingfoot. I was doing some radio shows out at Wingfoot back in, was that 08, I guess. And that's what that course was like. It was very penal if you missed the fairway. They had, you know, the two cuts, and the first cut of rough was no bargain, but the second was just brutal. It was like you were chipping out. And I think that's more of a U.S. Open setup to me. And when you get around the greens, let these guys weave their magic and try to save a par, save a bogey. The worst thing in broadcasting to me is calling a shot where there's a big roar and the guy saved, he made a six instead of a five. You know, it's just brutal.
Well,
I will say this. Let me just finish with this thought on the Open setup. People were criticizing these guys for the way they had it set up on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because they put a lot of the pins in the middle of the greens and let these guys play. But I was with Fleetwood. They had me out with Fleetwood early. And I nearly called a 62, which would have been the first at a U.S. Open. And that was fun. And you could see the fans getting into it. You could see the word spread around the golf course that this guy was shooting something special. And he had four birdies in a row on the backside. And there was a lot of electricity in the air. And that, to me, was fun. Now, they don't have to set it up like that 4 days a week, but it shows you that they can change just by hole locations and watering the golf course at night, how these guys can play.
Oh yeah, Bill. I mean, we're talking to Bill Rosinski from PGA Tour Radio, and I'm curious. Just before we let you go, I may have buried the lead because you used the word shenanigans, but the Phil Mickelson situation. Mark and I disagree. He's more in the Brandel Chamblee camp that he should have been disqualified and his head should be put on a stick. Me, as an average golfer, I thought, you know what, the day got away from him. It wasn't his finest moment, but let's move on. Where are you now that we've got a week behind us on Phil's, I think you said, shenanigans?
Yeah, I think it was, he was breaking the rules to his advantage, okay? So he's going to make, 10 on the hole or something, or 8, I forgot. To me, I think the onus was on Phil to DQ himself. Like, you know what? I made my point. I did something stupid, and I broke the rules. Everybody saw my point. I don't need to come back here on Sunday.
Yeah,
That's to me what should have happened. Same thing, you know, when Tiger had that drop at the Masters, and he dropped it like 2 yards behind from his divot mark. I don't know if you remember that, where he was playing 15 and all that stuff.
But let me ask this, though.
And people were talking about, you know, the Masters. They're not going to DQ Tiger because he's Tiger. No, I think it's on the golfer. Isn't it on us, the golfer, all the time to call penalty on ourselves?
But isn't there...
We're the guys out there. That's the main difference between golf and any other sport is we're going to go, hey, look, ball moved. Nobody else saw it. I saw it. Penalty's on me. And I think that's what should have happened. I know the USGA was in a spot with him, but the big picture to me was the golfer himself and Phil himself should have said, hey, look, I made my point. I screwed up. I'm DQing myself. I'll see you next week.
But do you think there's intent involved in that? I mean, Phil intended to break the rules. I don't necessarily think Tiger did. I think Tiger forgot that he was dropping. He needed to drop where the ball went in the water, not where it crossed the water, if that makes sense. I think Tiger dropped it intentionally a yard back, but I think he was thinking it was still in the same line where the ball crossed the water, forgetting that it hit the flag and went in. So I think there's a difference in intent from a disqualification standpoint. I think if you intentionally break the rules to your advantage like Phil did, I think that earns a disqualification. I think, did Tiger make a mistake? Yes, but I don't think there was intent to do that. And I don't know if there's a differentiation there or not.
Yeah, I see your point on that. I don't know. And Tiger, I think Tiger had like three options there, and he went back to where he was in the fairway because hitting down by the water is a joke there. You have no shot.
Yeah.
To hit the second one. So he had like three options, and he went back to where his ball was, quote unquote. And even, you know, he even admitted, I mean, in this press conference, he said, yeah, I went back a couple of yards because I had a better number from there. Mm-hmm. Obviously not knowing, hey, I should have dropped it, you know, like a foot from where I hit the last shot. Yeah. But in the end, he knew he made a mistake and signed a wrong scorecard. So, you know, to me, Phil was just making a point.
Yeah,
I know, and he had, you know, I think he had said originally that he had thought about doing that before, which doesn't surprise me either with Phil.
No, not at all. Well, Bill, man,
so
we,
you know,
yeah.
Again, that's what I, you know, and maybe the USGA and the Masters people should have done what they should have done. You know, I guess we always ask the question: if this would have been some other player, would we have? Would they have just DQ'd the guy?
Yeah.
And if it not had not been Phil or Tiger, because of their status and who they are. Remember the kid? There was a young Chinese kid playing Augusta, yep. And they put him on the clock. I think they actually penalized him for slow play.
Yes, they did.
Let me tell you something. They could be penalizing guys for slow play every week on the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
they could,
bad.
Unfortunately.
But they don't do it. Yep. Here's some young kid, some am, comes in there, hey, you're going to get penalized. This is a joke.
Yep. Well, Bill, man, we always appreciate you coming on with us, and we look forward to catching up with you again later in the year. Maybe we'll do it for the Open Championship.
I won't be there, but I'll be watching. So,
okay. Thanks a lot, man.
Anytime, guys. My pleasure.